Chapter 19, Kredeki. Kenink is a study of relationships, he told his audience. That part comes from our dolphin heritage. Kenink is also a study of strict comparisons, the second part we learn from our human patrons. Kenink is a synthesis of two world views, much as we ourselves are. About 30 neo-dolphins floated across from him, bubbles rising slowly from their blowmouths, intermittent, unconscious sonar clicks their only sound. Since there were no humans present, Kredeki did not have to use the crisp consonants and long vowels of standard Anglic, but transcribed onto paper, his words would have pleased any English grammarian. Consider reflections from the surface of the ocean, where the air meets the water, he suggested to his pupils. What do the reflections tell us? He saw puzzled expressions. Reflections from which side of the water, you wonder? Do I speak of the reflections felt from below the interface or from above? Moreover, do I mean reflections of sound or of light? He turned to one of the attentive dolphins. Watasetti, imagine yourself one of our ancestors. Which combination would occur to you? The engine room tech blinked. Sound images, Captain? A pre-sentient dolphin would have thought of sound reflections in the water, bouncing against the surface from below. The tech sounded tired, but Watasetti still attended these sessions in a fervent desire for self-improvement. It was for the morale of Fen like Watasetti that the busy captain made time to continue them. Kredeki nodded. Quite right. Now it would be the first type of reflection thought of by a human. The image of light from above, the mess chief, Satat, answered promptly. Most probably, though we all know that even some of the big ears can eventually learn to hear. There was a general scree of laughter at the harmless little put-down of the patron race. The laughter was a measure of crew morale, and he weighed it as he might test the mass of a fuel cell by hefting it between his jaws. Kredeki noticed for the first time that Takata Jim and Katha John had swum up to join the group. Kredeki quashed a momentary concern. Takata Jim would have signaled if something had come up. He seemed to be here simply to listen. If this was a sign the vice-captain was ending his long, unexplained sulk, Kredeki was glad. He had kept Takata Jim aboard instead of sending him out to accompany Orly and the rescue party because he wanted to keep his exec under his scrutiny. He had reluctantly begun to think that the time might have come to make some changes in the chain of command. He waited for the snickering to die down. Consider now, how are a human's thoughts about these reflections from the surface of the water similar to our own? The students assumed expressions of concentration. This would be the next-to-last problem. With so much repair work to oversee, Kredeki had been tempted to cancel the sessions altogether, but so many in the crew wanted desperately to learn Kenink. At the beginning of the voyage, almost all the Fen had participated in the lectures, games, and athletic competitions that helped stave off spaceflight ennui. But since the frightening episode at the Shallow Cluster, when a dozen crew Fen had been lost exploring the terrifying derelict fleet, some had begun to detach themselves from the community of the ship, to associate with their own little groups. Some even began exhibiting a strange atavism, increasing difficulty with Anglic and the sort of concentrated thought needed by a spacer. Kredeki had been forced to juggle schedules to find replacements. He had given Takata Jim the task of finding jobs for the reverted ones. The task seemed to suit the vice-captain. With the aid of Bosun Katha John, he seemed to have found useful work for even the worst stricken. Kredeki carefully listened to the swish of flukes, the uncomfortable gurgling of gill lungs, the rhythm of heartbeats. Takata Jim and Katha John floated quietly, apparently attentive, but Kraideki sensed in each of them an underlying tension. Kraideki shivered. There had come a suddenly vivid mental image of the vice-captain's shrewd, sullen eye and the bosun's great sharp teeth. He suppressed it, chiding himself for having an overactive imagination. There was no logical reason to fear either of these two. "We are contemplating reflections from an interface between air and water," he hurriedly resumed his lecture. "Both humans and dolphins envision a barrier when they consider such a surface. On the other side is a realm that is only faintly apparent until the barrier is crossed. Yet, the modern human, with his tools, does not fear the water side, as he once did. The Neofin, with his tools, can live and work in the air and look down without discomfort. Consider how your own thoughts stretched out when I asked my original question. The idea of sound reflecting from below came to mind first. Our ancestors would have complacently stopped with that first generalization. But you did not stop there. You did not generalize without considering further alternatives. This is a common hallmark of planning creatures. For us, it is a new thing." The timer on Kraideki's harness chimed. It was growing late. Tired as he was, he still had a meeting to attend, and he wanted to stop at the bridge to find out if there had been any word from Orly. "How does a cetacean, whose heritage, whose very brain is built on intuitive thinking, learn to analyze a complex problem piece by piece? Sometimes the key to an answer is found in the way you formulate the question. I'll leave you all today with an exercise for your idle moments. Try to state the problem of reflections from the surface of water in trinary, in a way that demands not a single answer or a three-level opposition, but a plain listing of the reflections that are possible." He saw several of the Fen frown uncomfortably. The captain smiled reassuringly. "I know it sounds difficult, and I will not ask you to recite today, but just to show you it can be done, accept the echo of this dream. A layer divides sky star, sea star. What comes to us at a narrow angle? The hunt-squeaking, star-catching octopus reflects. The night-calling, star-following tern reflects. The star twinkle in my lover's eye reflects. The sun, soundless, roaring show-off, reflects." Kraideki was adequately rewarded by the wide-eyed appreciation of his audience. As he turned to go, he noticed that even Takata Jim was shaking his head slowly, as if considering a thought that had never occurred to him before. After the meeting broke up, Katha John persisted in his argument. "You saw. You heard him, Takata Jim." "I saw and heard, Bosun, and as usual, I was impressed. Kraideki is a genius. So what is it you wanted to point out to me?" Katha John clapped his jaw, not the most polite gesture to make before a superior officer. "He says nothing about the galactics. Nothing about the siege, nothing at all about plans to get us away from here, or barring that, to fight. And meanwhile, he ignores the growing split amongst the crew." Takata Jim let out a line of bubbles. "A split you have been busily encouraging, Katha John? No, don't bother protesting your innocence. You've been subtle, and I know you've been doing it to build a power base for me, so I look away. But don't be sure Kraideki will always be too busy to notice. When he does notice, Katha John, watch your tail, for I won't have known a thing about your little tricks." Kathajan blew quiet bubbles, not bothering to reply. As for Kredeki's plans, we'll see. We'll see if he's willing to listen to Dr. Metz and myself, or if he persists in this dream of carting his secrets back to Earth unopened. Takata Jim saw the giant Stenos was about to interrupt. Yes, I know you think we should consider a third option, don't you? You'd like to see us head out and take on all the galactic single-handed, wouldn't you, Kathajan? The huge dolphin didn't answer, but his eyes gleamed back at the vice-captain. Are you my Boswell, my Seton, my Igor, or my Iago? Takata Jim thought silently at the giant mutant. You serve me now, but in the long run, am I using you, or are you using me?